It's the confluence where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Once again, Pennsylvania is a battleground state in the presidential election, with Donald Trump trying to hold on to the state that he flipped in 2016 and Joe Biden trying to win it back for the Democrats. Pennsylvania was referenced or mentioned directly a couple of times last night in the verbal battle, the first presidential debate. Joining us now is Chris Potter, the editor of WESA's Politics and Government Accountability Team. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Kevin.
Chris, was there a message for Pennsylvania voters in last night's verbal sparring?
Yeah, I mean, I think there was, and I think it wasn't just a message for Pennsylvania voters. It was a message for the voters in this country. And that is, among other things, we have a president who, when asked to disavow, to denounce white supremacist movements in this country, not only chose not to do so, but actually arguably encouraged them to continue tactics of intimidation and violence. This is not a usual thing I expected to say after a debate, but this was not a usual debate, and these are not normal times. President Trump also said that gave us all reason to believe that should the election results not go his way, he might not accept them as legitimate results. And I think the big takeaway from a very muddled and very difficult debate to follow is that we all really need to be thinking about the kind of chaos that this president appears A, to have perpetrated last night, and B, may perpetrate through this election, through November 3rd and okay. after. I think this is a really concerning moment for me personally. And I think people sort of need to be awake to that possibility. That to me is the biggest takeaway. We can talk about who won this debate, who lost this debate, who scored points, who didn't. But I think a thing happened last night, which I have never expected to see in my lifetime, have never seen before and hope to God never to see again. And I just think as Americans, we need to really think about what we saw last night, as painful as it may be.
OK, I want to get to a couple of things specifically about Pennsylvania, including sure. The president mentioned Pennsylvania directly when it came to the economy and the pandemic, questioning the actions of Governor Wolf. He said, quote, "Pennsylvania is like a prison," regarding the, shall we say, the shutdown, the restrictions.
Yes, that's right. And I mean, you know, I think that may come as news to some Pennsylvanians. Certainly, you know, most prisons that I'm familiar with don't allow you to go out shopping and to go to restaurants, even with lower capacity numbers that have been instituted to control the spread of the virus. But yes, I mean, there are clearly people who have felt, especially on the Republican side of the aisle, that Governor Wolf, some of his coronavirus policies have not really been grounded in science as they could be. They certainly haven't been communicated as well as they could be. But yeah, I mean, what we saw here is a sort of Pennsylvania-specific mention, and I think it's because we are a critical swing state in this election, of a broader criticism that the president has had, which is that Democratic governors in particular have clamped down on this virus, not for health reasons, but for reasons of trying to embarrass him. So, okay. Yeah, I mean, you know, there's certainly been a homegrown controversy here, and the president decided to double down by that with language likening Pennsylvania to a prison, which I don't know that anybody would really credit on either side of the aisle.
Okay, in our 30 seconds we have remaining, of course, the president called into question the mail invalid, whether it's fraudulent or not. He referenced Luzerne County, accidental discarding of 9 ballots. So the battle, Chris, for the battleground state of Pennsylvania resumes today. Briefly, Joe Biden will be back in our region.
Yeah, that's right. He will be doing sort of a whistle-stop tour. The vice president is a big fan of rail travel, as I think people know. And he is really making a point of connecting not just in places like in Pittsburgh. There are stops in Westmoreland County. There are stops in a lot of the rural kind of areas where Donald Trump was able to engineer a surprise victory in 2016.
Right.
And there were a lot of Democrats after the fact who really criticized their nominee that year, Hillary Clinton, for not reaching out beyond sort of the urban core.
All right,
so
Chris.
I think what you're seeing here is that Biden is trying to connect with white working class voters while he's still trying to hold on to voters of color and the cities, but also, you know, not necessarily to win a place like Westmoreland County, but to draw off enough votes to deny Donald Trump the huge margins that he got there in 2016 and that delivered him the state and the country.
Chris Potter, WESA's Politics and Government Accountability Editor. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you, Kevin. Have a good one.
It's the Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. The Pittsburgh region has been without a brand for quite some time, but that's changing with the official announcement Tuesday of Pittsburgh Region, Next is Now. Mark Thomas is the president of the Pittsburgh Regional Alliance, the marketing arm of the Allegheny Conference on Community Development. Mark, welcome back to the Confluence.
No, thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Mark, when you were on the show in August of last year, you had just joined the PRA, and you told us about a year-long effort to develop a new brand for the region. So how did you want to present Pittsburgh inside and outside of the region?
Authentically, right? And so it wasn't an effort to sugarcoat the region. It was really to look at what attracted people here, what attracted me to the region, what's great about it, where are areas of opportunity, what are some of our challenges, and how do you create a message that people who really want to invest here, want to build here, want to be a social entrepreneur here to help us solve our problems, that they understand that there's a space for them here.
So how did you ensure when doing your research that you spoke with diverse groups of people and communities? Let's face it, Pittsburgh business and culture doesn't just exist in the Strip or downtown.
No, 100%. And to some extent, we're built in to have at least a regional perspective. So we have 10 counties that I support, and I spend as much time with them as I do with major players within the city. And so there's a natural engagement. The second, when we were actually looking at, okay, how do we shape an identity, we held a number of just kind of focus groups and conversations and learned a lot from the 75th anniversary that the conference had conducted before I started. And so there was a lot of material for us to work with and identify, okay, how do we translate that into something creative and something that's exciting and something that really captures the core of who we are in a way that people could be interested to learn more. And sparking that interest is by far the most important thing.
Mm-hmm. We've heard for years about the two Pittsburghs and people and communities getting left behind. So who is this region for today and tomorrow so residents are not left behind?
I mean, the only way we win is if our region is for everyone. And historically, we definitely have had our challenges. I don't think we're unique in the country as far as places that have challenges with race and social progress. And I think if anything, there's been a greater awareness over the last year regarding the depth of our challenges. I think we're now at a place where we have to show momentum toward making progress on where we want to see the region head.
You can say that, but are there checks to make sure that people aren't left behind? Is that part of this strategy?
I think there is. I won't say it's all part of the brand strategy. I think it's part of the conference's broader agenda to work closely with public partners, work closely with government and all of our members to ensure that we're working toward a better future. Like, especially being an African-American male or black male, like, we understand that, like, progress takes time, but there is a sense of urgency that I think we've come to know over the last few months on all the issues that people have been actively advocating for. And so this is pretty much that moment for companies, for trade organizations, for government to really play a more proactive role in helping shape the future and listening to what people are saying and then building that into our work plans.
Mark, the Pittsburgh region, Next is Now. It implies the present and the future. Are there elements of our history, our past, that will be part of the marketing strategy?
It is. I mean, we have a legacy that we're building off of. We don't run from that legacy. We just don't lead with it anymore. And if anything, so much of the region's narrative, and I think it comes from a humble place, was based on kind of the past and the recovery from the past and somewhat the pain of being a place that went through the tough decades that the region did. That is not necessarily a draw for a young talent who has a lot of opportunities in the country and outside of where to go and set up a shop to live, build a career, you name it. And so what we have to do is really speak to the needs that people have identified of what they want when they're looking for a place to call home.
You're competing for outside investment, for even people. Do we have the homegrown workforce that is needed here?
We do. There is a part of, for some industries, you have obviously more talent than others. And so part of our work is to work closely with the academic community and just the training providers to understand how do they provide the workforce of the future for industries that are emerging, for fields that are on the horizon, and ensure they have the information they need to shape programs and curriculum to really train people for those jobs. The second is we have to be in a place where companies feel they can attract the talent, especially in now this kind of permanent, partial remote work space.
Have you done research into other cities that have rebranded in the past, and how much of a difference does it actually make in terms of dollars and business brought into those cities?
It matters, because if you don't necessarily know what you're getting or what you're signing up for or what a place is known for, you don't even put them on a short list. Places that have the strongest brands are places that have cultivated that identity over time. Obviously, places change. So you have a city like Boston that's super historic, but when you think of Boston today, you think of it being an innovation hub. And so there's an opportunity for every place to kind of rewrite its future.
You're unveiling this brand while we're still in a pandemic, while the economy is down. Unemployment in the region and across Pennsylvania remains in double digits. Is this the right time?
It is. If anything, the cards have been somewhat shuffled for what regions are well positioned to thrive. In our space, people really look at what regions have thrived kind of post-recessions or post-declines. And what has somewhat been baggage on our message for the last decade is we didn't grow as rapid as other regions post 2008, 2009, 2010. And so this gives us a chance to kind of reset that message and also focus more aggressively on being the type of market that is inclusive, that has kind of the right strategy to build a better place. I want people, at least in the role that we play, to feel like every year Pittsburgh is getting better and our region is growing and stronger.
Inclusive in what way?
From a demographic standpoint and at every income level, like to be a place where you have folks at any income bracket that feel like Pittsburgh is a place where they have opportunities.
Mark Thomas is the president of the Pittsburgh Regional Alliance, which has unveiled a new branding. The Pittsburgh region, next is now. Mark, thanks for your time.
No problem. Great. Thank you.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Today was the deadline for people to reply to the census. At least that's what the Trump administration had wanted. But Friday, a federal judge in California prohibited the administration from ending the count 1 month ahead of the original schedule, October 31st. Monica Ruiz is the executive director of Casa San Jose, a local nonprofit that advocates and provides resources for the Latinx community in Pittsburgh, and she's working with Keystone Counts to target often undercounted communities, including immigrants and people of color. Monica, how would this earlier deadline have impacted the accurate count of immigrants in our region and even across the state, do you think?
I think that it would have impacted it tremendously. I know that we had some outreach efforts that were going to span until the end of October. And when we were informed that the deadline had been moved up until the end of September, that left us kind of scrambling, trying to fit in events and things, and a lot of them we really couldn't.
What is the type of outreach that you will do?
Yeah, so, we have the Mexican consulate is coming. And that is a great opportunity to interact with folks that not only live here in Allegheny County, but even just Western Pennsylvania, Latinos, and, you know, maybe they haven't filled out the census. And so this would help let them have access to fill it out. And some of the other things are us going to local farms educating people on the census and showing them, you know, how to get online and do it themselves.
What are some of the barriers that immigrants and members of the community face in filling out the census?
Well, first, I think that a lot of information isn't, they don't have it, so they don't understand the importance of it. And so educating the community was something that we've been doing for quite some time. Then the other part is that, you know, the administration tried to put in the citizenship question, and then it was leaked that they wanted to share the information with immigration. And so these fear tactics are also detrimental to our communities feeling comfortable and safe filling it out.
How big of an issue is that of fear? And have you tried to reassure members?
Yeah, it is a big issue. You know, we really stuck our necks out from the beginning, letting folks know that this was going to be safe. So every time something comes out, we get a backlash from the community, like, you made us do this, you know, and now our information, our data could be jeopardized. And so really just making sure that we're communicating with the community, giving them accurate information, letting them know that this information is not going to be shared with any other government agency, and just showing them the importance of having this done.
According to the last census, 2010, 3.1% of the Pittsburgh population identified as Hispanic Latino. How much do you think that percentage maybe has changed over the last decade?
I would think that it has doubled.
And how many do you think people were left out maybe in 2010 and you don't want to see a repeat of that?
Absolutely. I don't know of any organization or any intentional efforts that were made to directly have the representation of the Latino community, you know, fill out the census. I don't know how many targeted efforts were made. I don't think anywhere. So there was a huge portion of the community that wasn't counted.
What is your message to the community about why the census is important to them and how it could affect them?
The census, you know, gives the government the opportunity to give us resources. But, you know, things like daycare and senior services, if we're not accurately representing the number of folks in these different categories, then we're going to be kind of in the same situation for the next 10 years.
So what would you like to see from elected and other leaders to ensure that the immigrant community is represented this census?
The city of Pittsburgh has a great initiative, and we've been working very close with them, but that's just the city of Pittsburgh. I really would like more countywide efforts. I would love to see more advertisements in Spanish. You know, we've been purchasing ads in local Spanish newspaper and doing things on the radio, but that's just Casa. And, you know, it shouldn't be just Casa. It should be, you know, a much larger group effort doing this.
Monica Ruiz is the executive director of Casa San Jose, and she's working with Keystone Counts to target often undercounted communities in the census. Monica, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, Kevin.
And despite the federal judge's order indicating the census count should continue as scheduled through October, the Secretary of Commerce has announced via Twitter a target date of October 5th to conclude 2020 census self-response and field data collection operations. The confluence reached out to the Commerce Department to explain what it means by a target date. As of now, no clarification. And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. Thanks to our team, Helen Wigger, Tom Hurley, Isabel Schmaler, Julia Zenkovich, and Mary Lee Williams. I'm Kevin Gavin. Until next time, hope you have a good day of good news.